Welcome to the podcast To Be Named Later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast To Be Named Later. I'm Chris here with my co-host, Kelly, back for another episode. Kelly, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, Chris. Been an interesting week in the sports world. A lot of different things happening. So let's get to it, as they say. Want to talk about the highs and the lows. We'll go jump to baseball first. Highs and lows. Seattle Mariners, what a comeback on Saturday. And what a devastation last night. Heartbreak. I put a tweet out on Twitter, said, baseball can break your heart with one swing of the bat. It can also bring you ultimate joy. Did you watch any of that game?
Yeah, I've dove into the baseball pretty good. This postseason's had no shortage of drama, man. I mean, there's been a couple. The Cardinals had an epic collapse in their opening series, and what happened to the Mariners in the bottom of the ninth. There's been three of them. These huge. Comebacks, man, from what seems like insurmountable position, the game's basically decided, and then next thing you know, it's not.
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier today. You know, I recognize that in baseball there's only 30 guys called manager, so I'm not going to necessarily second guess, but I do got to wonder why you bring a starting pitcher in probably one of the most tenuous relief moments for Seattle, and more power to the hitter. I mean, that you could sometimes, at least it sure sounds like it, man. As soon as he hit that ball last night, you could tell it was going to be a homer.
Yeah, I mean, dramatic win. You and I have both been following sports our whole lives, man, and we've, been around a few decades, I don't know, it was maybe about, 20 years ago or so, 15, 20 years ago when, analytics first started to play a role. And we've seen it throughout sports where these specialty positions, and it's actually creeping into football now more and more, more fourth downs, when to go for two, on and on and on. To me, as just a casual fan of baseball, it's always been perplexing when you see a guy who's been dominant. And I'm not saying that was necessarily the case in this particular game, but you see a guy who's been dominant, is in a rhythm, has a nice lather going, and then at whatever point the pitch count says, or a certain matchup says, hey, we should bring in this guy who we haven't seen at all, and have him come, take the mound here. And I don't know, man. So often I get when you're in the regular season and you got to make these guys last. And I understand there's a lot of data points to suggest when a pitcher should have had enough as far as pitches thrown. But if too frequently, I think we see managers going with the numbers and going with matchups. And, the mathematicians and the stat guys can churn as blue in the face as they want. But the fact is, I've just seen it time and time again where a guy's rolling pretty good and they bring a guy in off the bench and he gives it up. And it just seems to me like, man, you're better off just rolling with the guy who's on the mound currently, unless he's absolutely falling apart and has nothing left in the tank.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a technology, hater or anything like that, but I think sometimes the technology overcomplicates things, or at least takes some of the emotion out of it. And I've said it, and I'll keep saying it. Emotion is a huge part of sports. And sometimes it's as simple as it is back when you're a kid playing out on the playground or the ball field. Hey, just leave the guy in that's hot. And don't go look at some, chart of all the world and you cannot measure emotion, especially in playoff baseball in October.
Well, and you can feel, both while you're in the game playing, as well as you know, just as a fan watching, you can feel momentum. You feel it in sporting events all the time. You just see something happen, and in your mind you say, oh, we'll see where it goes from here. A technical foul in basketball, a pitching change in baseball, a call on the field, and maybe we can get into that a little bit as well. You know, a call on the field, like a roughing the passer or a pass interference, something that gives a team new life that they probably shouldn't have had, things like that. And you can just feel the momentum change, man. You can just feel like, oh, no, this is going to start swinging the other way.
Christopher, trying to make the podcast a little bit more literary with a little foreshadowing of what's coming up. We'll jump into that very question, but some of these last minute wins and things like that do bring up both a question I have for you as both someone who did play some competitive sports and as a fan, as a athlete and as a fan, Chris. Do you like to lose? If you have to pick, do you want to lose by getting a blowout, hammered from beginning to end, or do you want to lose on that last second drama? Which is more painful or least painful?
Well, I mean, you're backing me to a quote. Nobody wants to lose, Kelly. So I don't, it all hurts. But yeah, when you have, especially, so I've been in those situations where victory felt almost assured and it was snatched away. There's nothing more painful than that. That is, because you've already started the celebration, think Atlanta Falcons, up 28-3, that type of feeling starts to set in where, we're doing it. We're going to do it. And then, it takes a while to make up that those 25 points. And as it's happening, it's like, I don't know how to describe it, man. It's like you're in, if you ever had those dreams where you're running, but you're in, like quicksand or mud or something. And it's just like, you just can't get to the finish line fast enough, man. And it's like, you can see it happening. Like, oh no, I know what's happening. Everyone knows what's happening. Those are the losses, the ones where, you were up big, or there wasn't much time left on the clock. Think, Packers at Seattle, NFC Championship game, that type of feeling where you feel like, we got this, we're going, we're moving on, and then all of a sudden you're not. So
why don't you stab it a little deeper there, buddy? Thanks a lot for that memory.
Well, I'm trying to give perspective, so that's the feeling that hurts the most.
Yeah, when you were talking about that, I think I know my answer is it's those last minute losses. Seattle beating Green Bay, and in college basketball, believe it or not, my Wisconsin Badgers were actually in the NCAA championship game, up by, I believe it was 9 points to Duke. I think it was about halfway through the second half. Honestly, that is probably the most painful, to the extent you can have pain, lasting feeling of loss I felt as a sports fan. That Packer game we talked about is close second, but just because the Badgers, I mean, they don't make it, and they just had a run there where they had made it to the Final Four. 2 years in a row, they just don't make it to the Final Four, man, and in the championship game. I remember those feelings well.
Yeah, and when when you're the fan of a team or even a player on a team, when it's going to be tough to get back here again, hey, this is our one shot. We're not perennial here. We caught lightning in a bottle, and here we are. And if you don't make good on it, especially as a fan, if your team doesn't make good on it, the likelihood that you're back here anytime soon is pretty low.
Well, speaking of being tough to get back here, Chris, I believe if I look at the football standings, we had one game different last week, so we're tied. I suspect after that it's going to be hard for you to get back to that tied or ahead feeling. Is that dinner at the end of the year comes closer to me. So how are we doing on football?
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. So we had exactly one game different. I was down one going into the week. I got that game back. And so now after 5 weeks of action between you and I, it is a dead heat. Tied up. I'll let you out for half price right now, Kelly.
Yeah, I know you would. How are we looking this week on our picks, and what do we got different going on there?
So I went through, I saw what you submitted and compared it to mine. This week we got a little more room for movement. A couple of them make sense. One of them I'm taking a little flyer on. I'm just playing kind of a hunch. But the four games that we have different are Baltimore at the New York Giants. You went with the Ravens. I went with the Giants. That's my flyer. Baltimore should be able to score the points they need. The Giants have kind of been doing it a little bit with smoke and mirrors.
Let's take a pause there, because I don't know, was that smoke and mirrors or just a plain dumpster fire that went on in London for the Green Bay Packers?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we seem to cover this every week. I just, you know, you were surprised when the Patriots gave them a game, and now I got to tell you, Kelly, I feel like you're a little bit delusional on exactly how good the Packers are right now. You know, I understand, you know, we're used to them winning and we're used to them being a dominant team, a 13-3 football team, a 12-4 football team. You know, they're just not that right now, man. They're should be a playoff team. You know, they're pretty good, but they're not dominant. And if, you know, their defense is okay. But you watch them play on offense, man, they are struggling. They don't have a real identity. It feels like they're just out there kind of winging it. I know they want to run the ball, and they have two good backs to do it with, and they do it all right. But, you know, the rest of it is just, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe they'll put it together. You know, I think Dobbs looks really good. He actually looks the part of a number one receiver to me. You know, you just see him on the field. You see the way he runs his routes. Just his body language, everything about him actually reminds me quite a bit. Now, I'm not saying he's going to end up being Davante Adams in the end, but he reminds me a lot of how Davante Adams looked when he first came to the Packers. And, you know, he started out with limited playing time. So there were some other established guys there. And I feel like Dobbs kind of looks like that. So it's possible as the season develops, you know, him and Rodgers or you know, maybe even a couple of other guys. I think Tonyan's still getting into his football shape a little bit. That'll provide another weapon for him in the passing game. He's been more involved lately. But if we're being objective, man, the Packers are just kind of okay. So, you know.
No, I think you're right. There's, you know, we're 5 weeks into the season. And I'll tell you, there's two things I've been saying over and over that I'm going to revisit my thinking on. One is I'm concerned about the level of play of the Packers. I don't know if they'll turn it around. I'm not giving up, but I haven't seen it. And then every week I've talked about Detroit and how I believe in their coach and I think they're going to do it. I'm off that wagon, man, because that wagon's stuck in the mud. So, all right, back to this week's picks after we take that little side trip over the pond to the debacle in London. What are the other games we're different on?
So you have our kind of darling pick, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who I do still like, but I went with the Indianapolis Colts at home. This is a pick'em game. See if I could pull up the line, but they you know, this game could go either way. I just feel like, you know, Indy squeaked out a couple. They should have, Jonathan Taylor hopefully back this week. And, I don't know. I just feel like the Colts at home, you know, they're going to pull this one out. So I don't blame you for picking the Jags, man. We've talked about a bunch. We both like them. But someone's got to lose, and I'm taking the Jags.
Yeah, there's another team, Indy. I mean, again, I go back to the summer, and, you know, again, that's why I don't do this for a living. Although not that the people that do it for a living are any more accurate sometimes. No. Indy's whatever. I don't know what's going down there, but they're just not putting it together like I thought they would.
Yeah, and I think we're over evaluating the Jaguars a little bit. You know, I you know, said last week on our podcast that, you know, they might be the best team in that division. You know, they've been playing like the best team. You know, we'll see. Maybe they are. But anyway, that was one that we had different. And then, hey, moving on to the next game. This one's a little interesting, actually, when I looked at it. I kind of I went with your boys up in Seattle, and I'm a believer in the Seahawks, and apparently you are not. So that was that. I found that odd when I went through our picks that you went with the Cardinals and I went with the Seahawks. Give me your thoughts. Why the Cardinals? What is it that the Seahawks are lacking, or what haven't you seen from them?
I think it's more about, this might be a little bit of the thing that I usually say isn't a good plan. Hope. The Cardinals, on paper, they have a better team. So I guess I maybe am wondering if the magic's going to wear out for the Hawks. In retrospect, I'm not sure I like that pick of mine. I'll don't have a good reason when I must have clicked the wrong button, man.
All right, we'll go with that then.
How about that?
No, I think I don't think either of these teams is great. I think the Cardinals came into the season with kind of a cloud hanging over their head. You know, there was a lot of issues with Kyler Murray in the off season. You know, putting in his contract that he needs to do homework. You know, it just, I don't know, man. Just that place just kind of had a bad vibe for me coming into the season.
So I want to know the backstory on that. And how does that get into a contract and sign? Like, where is an agent or somebody saying don't? I mean, there is a story behind all this.
Yeah, and how does it get out? You know, number one, it shouldn't even be in there. Number two, how does it get out? You know what I mean? Like, who wins in that scenario? You know, and so that was definitely a mishap. And I think the Seahawks are still kind of playing with house money. I don't think anyone believes in them. I think everyone thinks that they're, you know, just, I don't know, getting lucky or whatever. And I don't know that that is the case, man. You watch them play. You know, reality is, Geno Smith is playing good. He's got good weapons. And I know Penny went down, and so now the young guy Kenneth Walker is going to get his chance. And I think he's just as, and possibly even more so, talented than Penny anyway. So, you know, I don't think they lose really anything there other than some depth, you know, and being able to spell a guy. They still have the weapons on the outside. I don't know, man. I think the Seahawks, you know, I don't want to say they're for real, but
neither might be, man. Geno Smith is, you know, for all the talk of all the elite quarterbacks, and I'm by no means saying he's elite, but he's more than serviceable for what they need right now. Now, you know, hopefully he can do it for them for the whole year, but definitely more than I expected from him going into the year. So more power to him.
You know, this, I'm realizing as words are coming out of my mouth, my stance is not that much different than the NFL. You know, it's I'm wavering from week to week. You know, last week I'm saying the Jags are the best team in the division, and this week I'm picking them to lose to the Colts, who are in their division. And then, you know, last week I'm talking about the Seahawks, you know, probably aren't the most talented, and then this week I'm talking about how, you know, they might be legit. And so, you know, it's funny. NFL's week to week, and apparently so is my perspective on the NFL.
What's the last game we have different?
This is the big one, man. Game of the week, game of the year, potentially. Buffalo Bills going back to Kansas City, the site of the just legendary divisional game from last year in which they lost. It just an epic, epic football game to the Chiefs in the playoffs last year, and I think we all remember that game. So Buffalo's going back. I'm going to give it another schwack. And you took the Chiefs at home. Can't fault you for that. I went with the Bills. And I don't think you can fault me for that. So just two real premium, the two best teams in the league as it stands right now. And they're facing off in a regular season matchup for what could be a very, very important tiebreaker come the end of the year. You know, this game very well might decide where the AFC Championship is played.
Speaking of the Chiefs, Yeah, I can't fault it. There's no wrong pick in this game. It could be quite a game. The NFL had some quite the happenings over the last week with a few different events, actually. Give us a sense, Chris. These plays, the roughing the passer calls, I mean, the way I obviously can't see, the way I kind of evaluate all this is usually I kind of read both of sides of the story of people that say, the call was good or bad, and I guess interpret that. But I got to be honest, on the two key roughing the passer calls that I was aware of from the last week, both the Tom Brady and then the Derek Carr, I don't know that there are two sides. I've heard very few, if any, people say they were good calls. What do you see and what happened? And give us your sense.
Yeah, so I went back and watched both of those. Obviously, they got a lot of airtime. You know, I listened to a lot of sports radio, and that was the topic of conversation. The two sides are more: do we make this reviewable? Is this something we want to make an adjustment on the fly, or not? You know, do we just wait? You know, and let things ride the way they are. The calls themselves, I think, pretty universally, most people, especially the Tom Brady one. Here's the deal, man. Here's what you. Okay, so if I can make this visual for you, Kelly, what I want to. Have you ever tackled anyone? You know, you ever?
I played ball, football with family and stuff. I've tackled people. Tackled people.
So you're bringing someone to the ground. You know, that guy doesn't want to go to the ground. You know, he's going to fight you on that, right? He's not trying to go down. So now if you're a grown man tackling a 6-year-old child, okay, you could pretty much do what you want. You could pick him up with one hand and set him down gently. If two grown men have different ideas of what should happen, a lot of times, man, you don't have a ton of control. You know, you're throwing your body at him. Grabbing a hold and doing everything you can to get him to the ground. You know, the idea that these defensive linemen have the ability to gently set these quarterbacks down is ridiculous. You know, it's just impossible, man. And so you're forcing them to make the decision, especially, okay, Tom Brady is not putting up too much of a fight, okay? Neither is Derek Carr, for that matter, actually. But no longer in the league anymore, but Ben Roethlisberger absolutely is putting up a fight. Josh Allen, good luck. If you try to set that guy down gently, I mean, two guys are attacking that guy with everything they got, and they can't get that guy on the ground sometimes. So this idea that these defensive linemen who are coming at these guys full speed with torqued bodies and these quarterbacks are fighting them and trying to elude them and stiff arming them and trying to shake them off. The idea that the defensive lineman has the ability to set them down nicely is ridiculous, man. It's just, you know, both of those calls were terrible calls. Both those calls, you just have to put flags on the quarterback then. So if you want to protect the quarterback, then, you know, put a flag on them, and if you pull the quarterback's flag, then the play is over. If that's what you want to do, then that's what you can do. If short of that, then you have to afford the defensive players an opportunity to tackle a guy, and sometimes it's not going to look so pretty. I'll say this, Kelly. Okay, so Chris Jones, he comes around the edge and he's chasing after Carr. He's kind of behind him. Like kind of back into the side of him at like a 45 degree angle, let's say, right? And Carr is kind of slowly making his way away from Chris Jones. And Chris Jones is in a top speed, like in a sprint towards him. And Carr is slowly heading the other direction. Chris Jones is going faster in miles per hour than Derek Carr is, okay? And when Chris Jones gets to him, He hits him. He hits him with the shoulder and not with his head. You know, all the legal hits that we, you know, all the form tackle that they want to see. But Chris Jones is not a gymnast, man. You know what I mean? He's a huge, huge, you know, 300, almost 300 pound man. He doesn't have the ability to stop his own body midair, right? So he's running. He goes to tackle Carr. Carr goes down in front of him. Chris Jones falls on top of him. He had his arms off to the side. He did not like bury his shoulder into him. Like if you want to drive someone into the ground, you tend to lower your head and lower your shoulder, and you make your body into a bit of an arrow, and you drive them in. That's not what Chris Jones did at all. His belly is basically what was on Derek Carr, and it was as legal a hit as you could have, man. And the Tom Brady one, I think they got a little hypersensitive with what happened with Tua, got a lot of press, you know, like we've talked about, NFL is an entertainment league, and you know, it's heavy in the media and media influenced, and they care what people are saying about them. And, you know, they got a lot of bad press over the Tua, you know, concussion, not concussion, and then back-to-back weeks and blah, blah, blah. I think they just overreacted, and I think, you know, this is what bothers me about sports, Kelly, especially football. You know, basketball's got to be the hardest sport to referee. Football's probably right behind it, you know, 1A, 1B. Baseball's a little easier. You know, you could debate balls and strikes, but, you know, there's lines, man. You could see if the ball's in or out pretty easily in most cases. Did it go over the wall or didn't it? But so much of what they do in football is subjective. And what bothers me the most is officials, and I don't know why this is so difficult to train them on. Officials call things based on what they think they saw. A certain movement of the body by both players suggests that this happened. And then when you watch a replay, that didn't happen. What you think you saw didn't happen. So how did you see something that didn't happen, man? And I just wish they were trained better to limit their calls to the things that they know they saw. And, you know, on both of these plays, the official was standing in a position, and it led him to believe that a certain thing happened based on how the bodies fell to the ground. Well, then he must have done this. And, you know, you're making assumptions, man, and that's what's bothersome about the officiating in the NFL. Too often the officials make assumptions of what they think might have happened as opposed to what they actually saw happen.
Yeah, look, I want safety, and I'm all for that. And, I mean, obviously the sport's cleaned up a lot, but I think they are overreacting. Speaking of officiating and all of that, you know, another area where I'd like to see the NFL make a significant change is pass interference. I really like the college rule. You know, it's a 15-yard foul, not wherever the ball happened. At least here again, maybe you have a perspective from what you see going on. But more and more it seems like all the quarterback's got to do is heave the ball and, you know, he's got a good shot at getting a pass interference call, even though the ball itself might not be catchable if that defensive player does anything. And I think it's too game-changing.
Oh, agreed 100%, man. There shouldn't be any penalties that awards you 50 yards of yardage, man. And anything that happens in the end zone, so any bombs from, say, the 50-yard line and in, and any deep passes is going to result in a first and goal situation. And that's just ridiculous. You didn't earn that. And then when you couple the fact that the call might not even been right to begin with, it might not even been pass interference to begin with, and now you're going to give the team a first and goal situation. You know, anything close to the goal line should be a half the distance, you know, same as everything else is. It shouldn't be put at the one. And I agree with you 100%. I've been saying this for 10 years that the college has it right and the NFL has it wrong. And they've addressed it and they've shot it down and they've stuck with the original rule. I understand the macro concept of more offense, more scoring, people like big numbers. And I think that has probably come into play, you know, in these meetings, these winter meetings, and discussing the rule changes and stuff. But NFL just plain has it wrong, Kelly. I'm on board with you 100%. I know we're not alone. It's just too big a play to be when it's a subjective call like that.
You know, I'm all for I like scoring and all that, but at some point, there's got to be an element of fair competition, and I I get it. Why the rules have swung so far, you know, but I think far too often it makes the competition unfair.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with you, man. I mean, if they call, I'll give them my opinion.
Yeah, same here. Hey, you mentioned something else I want to jump back to. You talked about balls and strikes being pretty easy to see in baseball. Something I've always wondered about, and we'll jump into baseball here with the playoffs and all that again. So a baseball, I don't know, the diameter of it is a couple inches at most. I don't know the exact size, but we could look it up, I'm sure. When you're at a ball game or on TV, like, can you really see if something's a ball or a strike?
Yeah, for the most part. Depends on your perspective, you know. I've sat in every single seat in a stadium. Well, roughly every seat in the stadium, right? Nosebleeds of left field, nosebleeds of right field, dead center, you know, front row of in center in the outfield, right behind home plate, second level behind home plate, on and on and on and on and on. I've seen a baseball game from literally every possible angle as a fan. And depending on the park you're in, generally speaking, you can see everything. It's about, you know, well, figure, you know, at the deepest point, figure you're 400 feet away, which does sound far, but the, you know, you're not ground level. I'm not 400 feet away on the ground. I'm elevated and looking down if I'm that far away, right? So I'm in the stands, raised above. From, you know, nosebleeds center field, can you see balls and strikes? Not really. But you, when the balls hit, you can see it. You can see the trajectory. You can kind of estimate the hold on, sorry, I was just looking at something. You can kind of see the speed that it's leaving with. And, you know, most stadiums do a pretty good job, man, of giving every fan a quality visual, you know what I mean, of the game that's taking place in the field. Obviously, you pay a little more for it to be a little bit closer. I'll tell you what, though, if you're sitting behind home plate, in most cases, man, you're only, you know, depending on what seat you have, you're only, you know, 20 feet behind the plate. That is you can see balls and strikes no problem, man. You're basically like a umpire for the most part. You know, you're further back, obviously, but you can see the height of the ball. You can see, you know, where the home plate is. You can see if it's off to the left or the right and how far it's off. As a fan, generally, you have a pretty good handle on. That's why you'll hear the crowd in unison. You know, it's not like six people. You know, when there's a ball or a strike called, right, and the home team doesn't agree if it didn't go their way, like they really thought it was a strike. That's the reason you could hear 50,000 people all sigh at the same time and moan and groan, because they all could see it.
What's your opinion about robo umps, you know, calling balls and strikes that you hear about?
Yeah, I'm actually not entirely opposed, you know. Everything feels weird until it happens. You know, when you add a three-point line, you're going to change the whole scoring of basketball. You're going to give extra points from shooting, like, from this random place that you just determined, you know. And it's really weird. And until you do it for a while, and then you realize, like, huh, it's not that weird. You know what I mean? We're pretty used to it now. And I think that's like that with most things. You know, you bring the two-point conversion into the NFL, and it's like, what? This is weird, man. We don't do this in the NFL until, you know, a couple years pass, and then it's not weird anymore. You know, it just becomes the new normal, man, like we're all dealing with in this world now. At the end of the day, I just want them to get it right. You know, I really do. I like, if it's possible to take some of the human element out of it, I'm not entirely opposed to it, man, myself. And I can understand other people's perspective. I get other people's opinions may differ from mine. But I would, you know, if we have the technology and the ability to get it right, let's just do that.
So speaking of baseball, we had between the last time we talked and now, the wild card round got over with. We were both wrong. The Phillies, as you said, you know, as soon as we picked St. Louis, the Phillies would take care of business.
Yeah, I mean, that was just that was a done deal. As soon as we both picked the Cardinals, I mean, I even said in our podcast, dude, that was as lock as a lock gets, baby. The Phillies were winning that series. So, yeah, and I mean, other than some, a couple of epic comebacks, you know, where teams were up to big leads and then gave up a bunch of runs late in the game. You know, there really wasn't a ton of drama in the wild card round. Now we're in the divisional round. A couple of road teams got out to early victories. So, you know, the favorites are having to come back. It's getting into full swing. So the Phillies, I guess the Phillies were the only one. I was counting the Mariners as a win. I guess only one road team won. The Phillies beat the Braves, and then the other three home teams won. The Mariners won.
I don't have the scores up, but there should, as we're recording this here on Wednesday night, there should be two games going on, if not over, right now.
Yeah, the Braves are up 3-0 as we're speaking on the Phillies, and they're in the top of the eighth. And then the Padres and the Dodgers are tied at 3 right now. So that's a series that I think Dodgers were pretty heavy favorites heading in. But I think the Padres are going to kind of give them the business. So we'll see how it shakes up. Dodgers won game one, got out to an early lead. And then Padres fought back a little, but in the end just didn't have enough. But the Dodgers burned through some pitching in that game. And we'll see, you know, what type of toll that plays in a longer series now.
Yeah, it's that one should be interesting. You know, I think the Dodgers up, you know, in the regular season obviously looked like, you know, one of the best teams. We'll see if San Diego can squeak it away. I still think I said before, man, a lot of emotion in sports, and I'm going to be really interested to see how the Mariners, they were kind of on this three-day high, if you will, of, hey, we came back on Saturday from being down whatever it was, 8-1 or whatever, and they were rolling against Houston yesterday, and then it all came crashing to an end. Tomorrow's game will really be interesting to see if they can bounce back or if they come out flat. That is the kind of loss that can take its toll.
100%. Yep, I agree with you entirely. It's just one of those things, man. You know, I kind of referenced it earlier, dude. Sports are heavy on momentum. I mean, you know, a lot of things are heavy on momentum, man. You know, you get things going the right way, man, and it's just, yeah, everything else just seems to fall in line for you sometimes. And in sports, especially because it's so short, right? You're doing all of this in a 3-hour period or in a week, or, you know, it's just a short period of time relative to life, right? So you're going to bang the series out in a week. You're going to play a game in depending on your sport in between 8 hours if you're in baseball, but between 2 and 3 hours, right? And you know, so you get a little momentum swing one way or another, and that's enough to win that particular contest a lot of time in sports. So yeah, I think there could be some carryover, man. We'll see. You know, maybe they just shake it off, and if they can, then you know, that, good on them. But most of the time, I'd say that's not the way it goes down, man. You take a gut wrenching loss like that, it hangs with you for a while.
Hey, speaking of momentum swings, little bit of momentum change going on down there in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah, they're they're up to number 6 in the standings. And
good old Rocky Top.
Yeah, it's been a long time, man. I mean, it was since maybe the 90s. You know, that Tennessee's been relevant in some way. So we'll find out, man. Because I'll tell you what, the way Tennessee looked last week in dominating LSU, you know, in Baton Rouge, and you know, in fairness, LSU playing at Tiger Stadium when the sun is out is entirely different than playing there, you know, at night, right?
And, you know, I'd love to. I've never been, but I'd love to go to one night game down there.
Yeah, so Tennessee had the benefit of playing them in the sunlight, And but bottom line is Tennessee whooped them, man. I mean, they whooped them. Final was 40-13, I think. But that game was never in doubt for the Vols. So at the same time, while that was taking place, you know, a little bit of the you know, preseason drama, you know, between Alabama and Texas A&M played out on the field. Alabama squeaked out a narrow victory, but A&M gave them all they wanted in that game. And so now, you know, a team who really looks the part in Tennessee's coming to town. So we'll see. You know, hard to believe, you know, that Alabama's ever going to lose. You know, you just never think they will because they've been so dominant for so long. But, you know, you take you change the colors on the jerseys, and the fact is Tennessee's looked like the better football team to this point in the season. So we'll see how that plays out this weekend.
What are the odds on that game? If you can pull them up. I'm just curious.
Let's see. I can find it pretty quick there. So let's go. I'll pull it up real quick.
We're starting to get into that time of the college football season where, you know, games are getting more interesting, and we're going to start to find out a lot over the next few weeks about who's for real.
Yeah, Tennessee's a touchdown underdog. So Alabama's favored by exactly 7. So, you know, yeah, you're 100% right, Kelly. So now this is where, you know, you go on your, you know, your Yahoo or your ESPN or your NCAA or CBS or wherever you go to look at the games, you know. You know, a lot of times, you know, you can sort by, like, say, top 25, let's say, okay? So you get the top 25 teams in college football and who they're playing. And, you know, generally you'll have a game, maybe two, that has two numbers by it, right? So two teams who are both in the top 25 are playing each other. And now, and that's the way it's been for the last, like, 5-6 weeks, right? Now all of a sudden, you start seeing multiple games where these teams are meeting each other. Now you're starting to see multiple, you know, so there are, you know, it's a Power Five conferences. Really, there's, you know, the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, the Pac-12, and then, you know, you mix in a couple of Big 12 teams. But really, SEC and Big Ten are the two monsters, SEC being, you know, probably the cream. Well, now all of a sudden, all these SEC teams, you know, when there's 6 of them in the top 25 or 7 of them in the top 25, well, now they're only playing other SEC teams. And so now all of a sudden you start looking, and it's a lot of numbers that are matching up. You know, Penn State and Michigan, two ranked teams. NC State and Syracuse, two ranked teams. Alabama, Tennessee, you know, two top 6 teams. Oklahoma State, Texas Christian, two top 25 teams. Mississippi State and Kentucky, USC and Utah. You know, these games matter quite a bit, man. If you have aspirations of winning a national championship, you know, you might be able to lose one of these, but you know, it's better if you don't. And you know, every game matters now.
Yeah, speaking of every game matters, you know, their coach left for USC. Oklahoma really having a tough year, man.
Oh, yeah. And I believe it's next year that them and Texas go to the SEC, isn't it?
Yeah. I wonder how I get it about why that happened, but
careful what you wish for.
I don't know that either one of those are going to be barn burners in the SEC.
No, man. I think, I mean, really it's been Oklahoma for quite a while now. I mean, Texas historically has been a power nationally. You know, they're kind of in the same realm. Actually, Michigan was in that same boat like Texas is in. And Michigan feels like they've made a pretty, you know, almost all the way comeback, right? So they're still behind Ohio State in their own conference, I'd say. But Texas is kind of that too. SC for a long time. SC was a national power for decades. And then, you know, they've just kind of not been that for a while. And anyway, Texas has kind of been that as well. You know, they just are, you know, not where they used to be. Well, Oklahoma has been. And Oklahoma has been dominant. And Oklahoma has been going to you know, the Final Four and playing in the championship series. Oklahoma has been a one-loss team regularly. You know, you're going to go to the SEC where they play, where everybody plays big boy football. And right now, with the way they look, playing in the pretty soft pack
Big 12.
Yeah, Big 12. Thanks, Kelly. It put, you know, pretty soft Big 12. When they start realizing, like, oh crap, every Ole Miss plays football. You know, everybody plays football in the SEC. Man, there's not going to be any days off. You know, like they were used to.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I mean, I'm sure they want them for the size of the fan base and all of that, but I'm not sure it's going to be a very smooth road for these teams.
No, and I don't know exactly. I'm sure the money made sense, and you know, obviously the Big 12's but kind of been a mess for going on a decade now. So you know, they made the move for a reason. I'm sure it was heavily money driven, and but you know, of those two teams, I think Oklahoma is probably in for the rudest of awakenings. You know, they've been sitting at the top of the mountaintop and you know, being the big fish in the little pond, you know. And, you know, when Auburn is, you know, one of the worst teams in the league, you know, good luck, man. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the money was drove a big part of this as well. I was in college and they can't even do math. The Big Ten will soon have not 12, not 14, but 16 teams.
Yeah,
with USC and UCLA coming into that conference in 2 years. That's going to be really interesting when you see some of those California schools flying back to Michigan or Wisconsin for a hoops game in January and February.
Yeah, and you know, everything will adjust in time and everything, but you know, that's a significant disadvantage to the two California schools. One in travel, but also, you know, okay, you and I both lived in Wisconsin. You grew up in Wisconsin. You're well aware of what the Midwest winters are like. So those California boys are, you know, going to be going to classes in 71 degree weather. Those California boys are going to be walking out to their car in their flip flops and shorts. And, you know, the guys that they're going to be playing against on Saturday will have gone to the grocery store in 12 degrees. They would have, you know, they will have shoveled the sidewalk in 12 degrees. You know, they'll be acclimated to what the winters are like out there. And those, you know, I'm from California, man. I got family in Wisconsin. I've been back and forth between the two many, many times. And I'm telling you, man, you get off the plane, you know, at O'Hare, and you feel it, man. And so
there was a Christmas. There's a picture in the family somewhere. I was at one of our brother's house. It's actually about 9 o'clock in the morning. I was sitting on your dad's motorcycle at another brother's house, just in the driveway, just taking a picture. And it was 85 degrees. I think this was the day before New Year's, actually. Jumped on an airplane. Got off the plane in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at about midnight. And it was minus 20.
Yeah, so, you know, that
we're talking 105 degrees change.
Yep. On a three-hour plane ride, huh?
People, if you haven't experienced it, that expression of it, take your breath away, it's real.
Yeah, and so that's why I think, you know, USC and UCLA, you know, again, I understand the money, and, you know, I understand you got to compete with the SEC, and I get why they're doing it. But I'll say this, yeah, at least for football, you know, basketball, again, it's a lot more travel. But they're, you know, they're young kids. I don't know that the travel is going to destroy them the way it might be for other people. But yeah, they're at a disadvantage, man. They're traveling a lot farther. You know, total miles traveled on a per game basis for SC and UCLA is going to be significantly higher than anyone else in that league.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of empty between the West Coast of California and the closest Big Ten team. You know, I guess if you jump off the plane in Nebraska, once in a while, or Minnesota. Those are probably the westernmost two teams. Even that's a pretty good trick.
Yep, I travel quite a bit for work, and you know, they calculated in. I mean, you know, they go play games on the East Coast and stuff. But now your conference games are going to be, it's going to be week in and week out, you know. So, or at least every other week, you know. So it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, speaking of challenges and everything, who's going to win these next rounds of the baseball? I know they've started, but what's your take on these divisional series?
Here, let me pull them up real quick. So you did edge me out on the first one we did. I got the Padres over the Mets correct, but you got both the Mariners and the Guardians right. So let's do this. Since you're the champ, champs go first. Phillies and Braves are playing currently. Phillies are up 1-0 in the series, but the Braves are up 3-0 in the top of the ninth right now. Who do you like there?
Yeah, I would have taken, even after yesterday's win, I still like the Braves. I think they're a pretty solid team. Philadelphia is a good story, to be clear, and they got a good story, and they're definitely an up-and-coming team, I'd say. But I think the Braves, I think that having that week off never helps teams. Baseball is a sport that's probably the most time these teams have had it off all year. Even the All-Star break isn't that long for some of those teams. So, you know, I take the Braves there.
Yeah, I think you see this. I'd have to, you know, crunch some numbers and really look at it. I'm sure someone listening may have a better handle on this. But I agree with you, man. For the pitching, you know, not so much. You know, it's a little longer break, you know, but they get sessions in, right? They plan for this. You know, they're pretty well orchestrated on their training, you know, for the starting pitching and stuff, right? Guys get go throw some balls and do simulations and stuff to keep their arms loosed and stay on schedule. But the guys who get jammed up are the hitters. And, you know, batting practice is not the same thing as live game action is. And, yeah, that week off, you know, I just feel like maybe they're stuck in the mud a little bit to start with. But I do think once they get their feet underneath them, and it looks like, you know, well, who knows with the way this postseason's gone, but they are up 3-0 in the ninth. So I think they'll get a win here and, you know, maybe settle in. So I actually am going with the Braves as well. I think their pitching's enough to win out in this series, in a long series. So, both with the Braves there. Hey, so this one, I think there's a chance we might be different on this one. The Dodgers and the Padres, who are also playing right now, tied 3-3. The Dodgers are up 1-0. Who do you like there, Kelly?
Yeah, I got to go overall with the Dodgers still. I think the biggest unknown with them is, for as good as they've been, they do struggle a little bit in the postseason, but they really didn't stub their toe much at all during the year.
No, they have a $6 billion payroll and you know, all MVP caliber players, either from past or present, and you know, they're stacked, man, all the way across the board. I mean, you know, they spared no expense. So all that said, I'm going with the Fathers from San Diego. I feel like that somebody's going to beat the Dodgers, and I don't know, you know, it might be all the way to the World Series before it happens, but I just feel like someone's going to beat them. And given the history of these two teams and the fact that the you know, Padres already have a postseason series win under their belt, you know, playing with a little bit of momentum, maybe. I understand I'm going out on a limb here, you know, and already being down a game. You know, and taking the dog, but I'm gonna go out on a limb. No risk it, no biscuit, Kelly. I'm going with the Padres.
Yeah, it won't surprise me if it happens. You know, I like it. Tell you this, to the extent a manager can make a difference, I like their manager.
All right, so the games that'll be played tomorrow, the Mariners, we've already discussed, had that heartbreaking loss, 3-run homer in the bottom of the ninth to lose game one of the series with the Astros. Had been on a really nice roll, you know, won in dramatic fashion in the opening round series. And
Nah, that balloon's popped. This is going to be. I'm looking for a Houston sweep at this point.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think Houston's going to win Game Two based on just everything we talked about as far as the hangover. You know, from that, that's just brutal. It's a brutal punch in the gut to lose that way. So, I agree, man. I'm going with the Astros as well. And then the last one, Kelly, is the Guardians at the Yankees. Yankees won Game One. You think the Guardians got enough to make it a series, or?
You know, when we talked about this team, these two, when we talked about the Guardians and Tampa Bay last week, I told you this was probably the two teams I knew the least about. So again, I don't feel overly qualified on this one, but I think, unfortunately, I'm not a Yankee fan, but I think they're going to do this one too.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, getting Game One, I just think they have too much offensive firepower. I'll take the Yankees. Only game we have difference, the Dodgers and the Padres, and I know I'm going on a limb there, but you know, we'll see. Like I said, no risk it, no biscuits. So, hey, real quick, man, well, I got you here. We touched on a little bit, but I want to get your take at this point. Basically, we're done with the preseason. I want to circle back to the college football. You know, who are your teams, man? If I gave you two teams and then I get the field, who do you feel like, Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama have all kind of taken turns? I don't know if Ohio State's ever been number one, but they've kind of moved around in that top three a little bit. And right now, as it sits, Georgia's currently ranked number one, with Ohio State 2, Alabama 3. I'll run you through real quick. Then Clemson, Michigan, Tennessee, USC, Oklahoma State, Ole Miss, and Penn State. Okay, that's your top 10 right there. Who of those teams do you think has looked the most dominant? And, you know, if you had to pick a team or two, who do you think is most likely to raise the trophy at the end of the year?
I know it's a bit of a darling pick, but just having followed several of their games, the two teams that I would say to me are right now that I would be putting up there at the, you know, to take part in the championship, just based on what I've seen so far, I'd be looking at a Tennessee-Ohio State championship.
Yeah, we're going to know a lot this weekend. So Tennessee's, like we said, a 7-point underdog at Alabama. Not strange. Alabama has all the history and championships, and they've been the program in college football basically since Saban came. So, you know, not strange, but I agree with you, Kelly. I mean, you know, just watching games, Tennessee looks the part. So, you know, we'll see this weekend.
You know, one of the things about college in particular, and it happens in the pros too, but many teams, though, come to a grinding, screeching halt at this time of year. So I've said Tennessee looked the part, that's why I don't bet, man, because you can't bet against Saban. He's got some kind of black magic there. Again, it wouldn't surprise me if there other happens, but it's also not out of character for at some point Tennessee to get it back. I mean, you know, there was a period of time when they were a dominant force, and I think unlike, let's just say, Nebraska, that I don't know that they're ever going to turn it back on, and they were once a proud program. I'm not saying they're not proud now, but definitely just they don't have the players. Tennessee, you know, has the resources and the players to be a dominant program again. So we'll see.
Yeah, and you've made reference to this in the past. You know, sometimes you have to learn how to win. And, you know, in Tennessee's case, they, you know, historically they know how, but it's been a while. None of these kids were, you know, maybe they were in diapers, maybe, you know, when Tennessee was a truly quality program. So, you know, I just wonder if it might take them a couple of years. Kind of like Georgia, actually. you know, Georgia now is a dominant program, named ranked number one in the country. They're legit, and nobody questions it. But they were kind of the little brother for a good, you know, 3 or 4 years before they finally, you know, realized, hey, you know, we belong. You know, we are as good as Alabama. And I just wonder if it might take Tennessee, you know, 3 or 4 years to really believe it themselves when they look in the mirror, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see a lot on Saturday because, you know, that should be a good game. So far, both teams have, you know, obviously Alabama stubbed their toe a little more than Tennessee, but they're both, I'll just tell you this, man. They play a different, I love the Big Ten, and it's, but they play a different brand of football in the SEC. There's no doubt in my mind that as far as it comes to the skill positions, they have the better players.
Yeah, I mean, they just, you know, people know that. It's coaching matters, and we talked a lot about Wisconsin coaching their players up and stuff, but, you know, SEC just gets better players, man. I mean, across the board, you know, everyone, you know, if you're somebody in the country, you know, as a high school football player, you know, yeah, I mean, a good portion of them want to go play there. So,
and I think the thing that, you know, it's really hard to keep in mind, like, these schools have, I believe they get 25 scholarships a year. So, you know, they've got 100 players stashed away, you know?
Yeah.
And I guarantee you there's, and you'll see this with the transfer portal sometimes, but I guarantee there's guys that are number 60 or 70 at a school like Alabama that could start at a lot of other schools.
Oh, absolutely. You see it all the time on their defense. You know, when was the last time you remember Alabama's defense not being, you know, I mean, they're pretty much always elite. And, you know, then they send 7 players to the NFL, and then next year they return 4 starters, and then they're an elite defense. And then they send 6 players to the NFL, and then next year they're an elite defense. And then on and on and on, and this just keeps going, man. There's a dude that's just waiting in the wings for his chance. And, yeah, he could have been a 4-year starter if he wanted to go to Toledo, but instead he went to Alabama to be a 1 or 2-year starter. And, you know, they're just chock full of those guys, man. And I mean, skill position, absolutely. I think the Big Ten holds its own up front, you know, on the off, especially on the offensive line. But offensive line and defensive line, I think the Big Ten is you know, right there with the SEC.
Yeah, they hold their own. They hold their own on the lines. Where they struggle, in my opinion, where they really struggle, except for a couple of schools, is, and again, it's just a different brand, but they just, you know, other than your Ohio State, Michigan maybe when they come back, Penn State at times is getting that, you know, elite quarterbacks, wide receivers, and in particular the safeties and such on defense.
Yeah.
What it all boils down to, they just don't get as many of the players with speed.
Yep, that's it, the speed of the SEC, and that's why guys who play there transfer right over to the NFL and a lot of times can excel immediately because, quite simply, the Miami Dolphins drafted a wide receiver from LSU, and they're playing against the Jets, whose rookie corner is from Alabama. And then I played against this guy last year. And so, you know, that happens quite a bit, man. The speed in the SEC is just entirely next level. And I think you touched on it, man. We're, especially in the secondary, no league anywhere across the country has the type of cornerback safeties like the SEC does.
Yeah, no, I think what you said is right. I mean, there's an old, you know, when you got a really dominant college team and some really bad NFL team, people will say, oh, well, could dominant college team X beat NFL team Y? I think that would be a resounding no. But in the one-on-one matchups, players can definitely hold their own because, as you just said, it's often the same dudes that were going against each other a year ago in college.
Yeah, I mean, it really is, man. So,
you know, and, or they were on the same team.
Yep.
And now they're playing against each other. So, a lot of good stuff this week, Chris. A lot of sports. You know, a couple other sports are getting ready to kick off that we'll have to get into a little bit here next week. Hockey and basketball. Just hockey started, and basketball is in preseason. But interesting things. I do want to get your take on one last thing. If you saw it, or and partly because we talked about a not an identical scenario, but a little action kind of with on the football field with a player and someone who also was involved. What's your opinion on the Davante Adams and by at least what I read, I didn't see it obviously, but pushing a camera person or audio visual person or something down.
Well, and I want to put this out right straight away. From what I understand, all accounts, Davante Adams apologized immediately, said, you know, hey, I was in the wrong. You know, hope you accept my apology. You know, you have to understand, if you're putting yourself in those positions, what you have to understand is the environment you're in. You know, going to a football contest in a stadium at the NFL level is not the same interaction that you're going to have as going to Starbucks and ordering a coffee. You know, you're in a different place. Emotions are high. These are monsters of humans that play, you know, as we've stated, a very emotional game. One, he was probably not in the ideal spot where, you know, he was in the tunnel, man. And, you know, dude, again, you know, this is know your place. And I understand you have credentials. I understand, you know, you have a right to film the game and you know, take your pictures and do what you need to do and do your job and everything. But, you know, when you get caught up in it a little bit, let's not overreact either. So my take on it is, you know, Davante Adams was wrong in doing it. But, you know, so am I when I cut the guy off, you know, coming out of a parking lot, you know what I mean? Like, so am I when I do other inconsiderate acts over the course of my daily life, right? You know, this is his workplace. You know, I offend people from time to time. I'm sure you do. I'm sure we all do, right? And what Davante Adams did, you know, he was in deserving of an apology. But the fact that he was, you know, already on the phone with the lawyer, you know, before he hit the ground, that's the part that's infuriating for me. You know what I mean? Like, can we just have a little thicker skin, you guys? Like, you know, probably would have been better if it didn't happen, but, you know, there's no need to overreact either, man.
You know, we'll cover this next week. I'd like you to think about it for a week. Because one of the things is, and just watch some games and notice this, I don't know what to think about it. Obviously, it seems out of character for who Davante Adams was as a Packer and who I think he is as a person. He did it. He did apologize. I'm not excusing it because, you know, we talked about the Bobby Wagner thing a week ago. I'm not saying the two are the same. But, you know, ideally you don't be pushing people around. I will say I don't think any of us can appreciate what it's like to play a professional sport, especially football, and where, like, it's not your average workplace is all I'll say.
Yeah, and you're catching them. That game had just ended. You know, the Raiders were in that game, dude. And I mean, that was a game they had to have, and they were in it. You know, you asked me early on, like, what hurts more, you know, in losses and things like that. And, you know, that was a game that the Raiders had an opportunity to win. Now, obviously, the Chiefs are a good football team, but in that moment, Davante Adams isn't thinking about, well, the Chiefs are a good football team, and yeah, we gave it our best shot. He's heated. He knew that they could have won that game. In his mind, I'm sure he felt they should have won that game. You know, it was their fault that they lost that game. And I'm sure, you know, this guy's catching him. No, we as normal people don't have these extreme highs and low moments like a football player does. It's like, you know, trying to talk with a fighter immediately after a fight. You know, if you talk to a fighter on a Tuesday, you know, a month before his contest, he's probably fairly even keeled, you know. But if you want to catch him in the absolute heat of the moment, when something just happened, you're not going to get the best version. We're all like that, man. You know, every human's like that. You're not going to get the best version of me. I think Davante Adams is a class guy, always has been, always carried himself that way. This was just a freak situation, and you know that you shouldn't have been there, man.
I mean, I think the challenge with any sport is, right? I mean, look, whatever the sport is, there is, to do it well, you are unleashing pieces of you that most of us either don't have or have never been in an environment where it would be okay to let it loose. But the actions of your professional game... I mean, think about it, man. When in your life do you get to, and when would you want to, line up against another dude as big as you and run into him as hard as you can, trying to knock him down to get to another guy behind him?
Yeah, it's just, you know.
I mean, if you break that.
they're different animals, man.
You know, if you break, if you break the actions down, some of the actions of any sport, they sound kind of bizarre. But it's you know, human beings have always had sports. I mean, think about hockey. Here's these guys with big sticks in their hand on ice skates, you know, banging into each other as hard as they can at times, knocking them into the, you know, pieces of wood along the rink.
Yep.
And let me tell you this, man. I don't care how many pads you got. You can't tell me that when you get checked into the boards, you feel that. You've ever been to a hockey game, man, and you sit down low by the thing, and you can hear the banging on the board when these dudes get checked into the boards. I mean, look, I'm not glorifying violence in sports, but I mean, they're contact sports, and we as humans have played them for a long time. I think so. I don't know. I just, anyway, the thing I wanted you to think about, that the Davante Adams thing, just for next week, is because they never tell you this either. I mean, how many other people, like, are, when you watch a game, if you can tell, how many other people are, like, down around the field, like reporters and just other people, and what are they doing? You know, if you're at a game, and what all do you see? I mean, I hear, you know, hey, well, there's always a sideline reporter. Well, how many of them do you see? I mean, there's a lot of times a radio person, a national TV person. Just give some thought to that. Like, what's going on around the field that I don't hear about?
Yeah, we can dive into it next week, Kelly, and I'll make a special note of, you know, as the cameras are scanning the sidelines of all the various things. Yeah, there's a lot, dude. There's a lot. So, I mean, hell, Kelly, even at a high school football game, you have alumni, you have ex-players that are there. You have, the cheerleaders are on the sidelines. You have the injured players. You have your call-ups, you know, say at a varsity game. At a Texas game, you got Matthew McConaughey wandering around in a T-shirt, you know, it's a spectacle, man, and a lot of people want to pass, and there's people who belong there, obviously coaches, players, training staff. You got to have your get back coach and your wire person. So they got a person who just holds the wire so the coach doesn't trip over it, you know, the radio wire and stuff. Right. And, yeah. And they're just running around trying to keep the wire off the ground. And like I said, you have your get back coach, you know, his full-time job is just to make sure people, you know, aren't wandering too close to the sidelines where they can get a flag. And, you know, all these people all have actual jobs in addition to the head coach and the defensive coordinator and all the other people who, you know, have quite a bit going on. And the players that are running off on and off the field, but yeah, the training staff and on.
Take some notes. I'll give you some homework, man, because
all right, I'll do it.
I would bet you, my vision, and I don't say I have this entirely, but the sideline, I'm sure, isn't just 40 guys that aren't on the field sitting on the bench quietly.
Nope, it is not. So I'll paint you a nice picture next time we talk, Ellie, of who's all there, and maybe I'll find some of the the odd ones. You know, like, what the hell is that guy doing there? So,
all right, Chris, and, you know, as always, another enjoyable conversation. Thanks to our listeners for sharing your time with us. And it's another episode of the podcast to be named later. And we'll talk to you again next week. Have a great week, Christopher.
Yeah, great talk, Kelly. I'll talk to you soon, big guy.